Yesterday was the disappearance day of Swarup Damodar Goswami and Shivananda Sen, and of course as well as Rath Yatra in Puri. I wonder how many devotees had the opportunity to see Jagannath. Modern technology gives us that really good opportunity that wherever we may be in different parts of the world, still we can have direct access to seeing Jagannath coming out of the temple, mounting the cart, going to Gundicha. Now he's sitting on the cart and will be there all day long giving darshan, and this evening he'll enter into the temple and then stay there and enjoy his Vrindavan pastimes in the Gundicha mandir and gardens. And then following week come back again with a similar procession, although not as observed in the same way with as many people. I was thinking how Swarup Damodar Goswami, who is Lalita Devi in Lord Krishna's pastimes and the confidential secretary of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how he particularly left his body on the same day that Rath Yatra was taking place. Well, we can be envisioning that, that on one side Jagannath's Rath Yatra is happening, another is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, those who are residing in Puri following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, that they were with Swarup Damodar Goswami and also observing his disappearance at the time when gopis were trying to bring Krishna Dwarkadish from Kurukshetra back to Vrindavan. Then of course Srimati Radharani is the principal attractive force to bring Krishna back, and her source of her strength and determination and good counsel is Lalita Devi. So how both in the manifest pastimes of Lord Jagannath Leela, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was by that time present in his unmanifest form, and how Swarup Damodar Goswami also transited from the manifest pastime to the unmanifest pastime is a realization that devotees may have by the proper practice of Krishna consciousness and by gaining the mercy of the associates of the Lord. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in relationship to the verse of Madhavendra Puri, Hamaturanata Kadavalakshasi, that if someone wants to understand this verse, then it's only possible by the mercy of Swarup Damodar Goswami. So understanding transcendental personalities, their pastimes, that is possible by their mercy. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripa tamaham bande. So one needs to have the kripa of superior personalities in order to understand them. And by the mercy of Jagannath, by the mercy of Swarup Damodar Goswami, by the mercy of Shivananda Sen, then we can understand them, their roles in Gaura Leela, Krishna Leela, as well as how we can become assistants and participants in those pastimes. Here reading from Krishna book. All the wives of Lord Krishna were completely absorbed in thoughts of him. Krishna is known as Yogeshwar, master of all yogis, and all the wives of Krishna Dwarka used to keep this Yogeshwar within their hearts. Instead of trying to be master of all yogic mystic power, it is better if one simply keeps the supreme Yogeshwar Krishna within his heart. Thus, one's lives can become perfect and one can very easily be transferred to the kingdom of God. This we read yesterday. It is to be understood that all the queens of Krishna who lived with him in Dwarka were in their previous lives very greatly exalted devotees who wanted to establish a relationship with Krishna in conjugal love. Thus they were given the chance to become his wives and enjoy a constant loving relationship with him. Ultimately, they were all transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. The Supreme Absolute Truth Personality of Godhead is never impersonal. All the Vedic literatures glorify the transcendental performance of his various personal activities and pastimes. It is said that in the Vedas and in the Ramayana, only the activities of the Lord are described. Everywhere in the Vedic literatures, his glories are sung. As soon as soft-hearted people, such as women, hear those transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna, they immediately become attracted to him. Soft-hearted women and girls are therefore very easily drawn to the Krishna consciousness movement. One who is thus drawn to the Krishna consciousness movement and tries to keep himself in constant touch with such consciousness certainly gets the supreme salvation, going back to Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. If simply by developing Krishna consciousness one can be transferred to the spiritual world, one can simply imagine how blissful and blessed were the queens of Lord Krishna, who talked with him personally and saw Lord Krishna face to face. No one can properly describe the fortune of the wives of Lord Krishna. They took care of him personally by rendering various transcendental services, like bathing him, feeding him, pleasing him, and serving him. Thus, no one's austerities can compare to the service of the queens at Dwarka. Shukadeva Goswami informed Maharaj Parikshit that for self-realization, the austerities and penances performed by the queens at Dwarka have no comparison. The object of self-realization is one, Krishna. Therefore, although the dealings of the queens with Krishna appear just like ordinary dealings between husband and wife, the principal point to be observed is that the queen's attachment for Krishna. The entire process of austerity and penance is meant to detach one from the material world and enhance one's attachment to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the shelter of all persons advancing in self-realization. As an ideal householder, he lived with his wives and performed the Vedic rituals just to show less intelligent persons that the Supreme Lord is never impersonal. Krishna lived with wives and children and all opulence, exactly like an ordinary conditioned soul, just to teach those souls who are actually conditioned that they must enter into the family circle of Krishna, where he is the center. For example, the members of the Yadu dynasty lived in the family of Krishna, and Krishna was the center of all their activities. Renunciation is not as important as enhancing one's attachment to Krishna. The Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for this purpose. We are preaching the principle that it does not matter whether a man is a sannyasi or a grihastha householder. One simply has to increase his attachment for Krishna, and then his life is successful. Following in the footsteps of Lord Sri Krishna, one can live with his family members or within the society or nation, not for the purpose of indulging in sense gratification, but to realize Krishna by advancing in attachment for him. There are four principles of elevation from conditioned life to the life of liberation, which are technically known as Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha: religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. If one lives a family life following in the footsteps of Lord Krishna's family members, one can achieve all four of these principles of success simultaneously by making Krishna the center of all activities. It is already known to us that Krishna had 16,108 wives. All these wives were exalted, liberated souls, and amongst them Queen Rukmini was the chief. After Rukmini, there were seven other principal wives, and the names of the sons of these eight principal queens has already been mentioned. Besides the son born of these eight queens, Lord Krishna had 10 sons by each of the other queens. Thus altogether, Krishna's sons numbered 16,108 times 10. One should not be astonished to hear that Krishna had so many sons. One should always remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that he has unlimited potencies. He claims all living entities as his sons, so the fact that he had 161,080 sons attached to him personally should be no cause for astonishment. Among Krishna's greatly powerful sons, 18 sons were Maharathas. The Maharathas could fight alone against many thousands of foot soldiers, charioteers, cavalry, and elephants. The reputations of these 18 sons were very widespread and are described in almost all the Vedic literatures. The 18 Maharata sons are listed as Pradyumna, Niruda, Diptiman, Bhanu, Shamba, Madhu, Brihadbanu, Chitrabanu, Brika, Aruna, Pushkara, Vedabanu, Shukadev, Sunandan, Chitrabanu, Virupa, Kavi, and Yagrodha. Of these 18 Maharatas, sons of Krishna, Pradyumna is considered the foremost. Pradyumna happened to be the eldest son of Queen Rukmini, and he inherited all the qualities of his great father, Lord Krishna. He married the daughter of his maternal uncle, Rukmi, and from that marriage, Aniruddha was born. Aniruddha was so powerful that he could fight against 10,000 elephants. He married the granddaughter of Rukmi, the brother of his grandmother, Rukmini. Because the relationship between these cousins was distant, such a marriage was not uncommon. Aniruddha's son was Bhadra. When the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed by the curse of some Brahmins, only Bhadra survived. Bhadra had one son whose name was Pratibahu. The son of Pratibahu was named Subahu, the son of Suhabahu was named Santasen, and the son of Santasen was Shatasen. It is stated by Shukadeva Goswami that all the members of the Yadu dynasty had many children. Just as Krishna had many sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons, each one of the kings named herewith also had similar family extensions. Not only did all of them have many children, but all were extraordinarily rich and opulent. None of them were weak or short-lived, and above all the members of the Yadu dynasty were staunch devotees of the Brahminical culture. It is the duty of the Kshatriya kings to maintain the Brahminical culture and protect the qualified Brahmins, and all these kings discharged their duties rightly. The members of the Yadu dynasty were so numerous that it would be very difficult to describe them all, even if one had a duration of many thousands of years. Srila Shukadeva Goswami informed Maharaj Prakrit that he had heard from reliable sources that simply to teach the children of the Yadu dynasty, there were as many as 38,800,000 tutors or acharyas. If so many teachers were needed to educate their children, one can simply imagine how vast the number of family members. As for the military strength, it is said that King Ugrasen alone had 10 quadrillion soldiers as personal bodyguards. Before the advent of Lord Krishna within the universe, there were many battles between the demons and the demigods. Many demons died in the fighting, and they all were given the chance to take birth in high royal families on this earth. Because of their royal exalted posts, all these demons became very much puffed up, and their only business was to harass their subjects. Lord Krishna appeared on this planet just at the end of Dwapara Yuga to annihilate all these demoniac kings. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sharunam, Binashaya Chidushkutam. The Lord comes to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants. Some of the demigods were asked to appear on this earth to assist in the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. When Krishna appeared, he came in the association of his eternal servitors. But some of the demigods also were requested to come down to assist him, and thus they took their births in the Yadu dynasty. The Yadu dynasty had 101 clans in different parts of the country. All the members of these different clans respected Lord Krishna in a manner befitting his divine position, and all of them were his devotees, heart and soul. Thus all the members of the Yadu dynasty were very opulent, happy, and prosperous, and they had no anxieties. Because of their implicit faith and devotion to Lord Krishna, they were never defeated by any other kings. The love for Krishna was so intense that in their regular activities, in sleeping, traveling, talking, sporting, cleansing, bathing, they were simply absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and paid no attention to bodily necessities. That is the symptom of a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. Just as when a man is fully absorbed in some particular thought, he sometimes forgets his bodily activities. The members of the Yadu dynasty acted automatically for their bodily necessities, but their actual attention was always fixed on Krishna. Their bodily activities were performed mechanically, but their minds were always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Now comes the really beautiful, exciting part, at least for me, of this chapter, but we're going to leave that for tomorrow, when Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out Krishna's five excellences.